Friends, will you please join me in prayer? Holy God, we thank you today for your word, for your presence in our lives, and for the presence of all these brothers and sisters around us. Help us today to be your people, to be inspired, and to be sent out into your world to do your work. Amen. Well, the story that we just heard a few minutes ago is a fairly popular one, the story of the sheep and the goats. It's a good story. I think it's one that resonates with us because the message seems fairly simple. Usually kids walk away from this saying, we want to be a sheep, we don't want to be a goat, because the sheep care for others. The sheep look out for the least of these. And in doing so, it's as though they have the gift of caring for Christ himself. But the goats? The goats, not so much. The goats do nothing. And in doing so, they pass up the opportunity to meet Christ again and again. So, again, it sounds like a good, straightforward story, but it's not so easy if we set out to practice it. And so I want to start by reframing this story a little, because we often hear this called a story of judgment. The judgment of the nations is what the header says in my Bible. And it implies that the story is about what will happen down the road, what will happen after we die, or what will happen when Jesus comes again. But I want to remind us where the story fits within Jesus' story. It's actually at the very end of a long monologue that Jesus is giving his disciples. And at the very next moment, Jesus tells them that he is going to die soon. And so it's kind of like a farewell address that Jesus has been sharing with his disciples. And I think that what Jesus is concerned about is not so much what will happen to the disciples down the road, but how the disciples should live right here and right now. And so that's how I would like for us as disciples, right? For us as disciples of Jesus to think about this story. This is a story about how to live right now. And in the book that we've been enjoying this summer, An Altar in the World, I hope you're all having a chance to read it along with us. But in this book, Barbara Brown Taylor calls this the practice of encountering others. And so if we hold that book in one hand and we hold the Bible in the other, I think that we might find some really practical guidance for how to live right now in our world, in our community. And for starters, I think that that basic message still holds true. When we are in a position to provide food or drink or to provide clothing or comfort, we should do so. When we're in a position to provide that to the people who our world considers the least of these, absolutely, we should do so. And yet, despite how pervasive poverty and injustice is in our world, I hope you'll forgive me if I say that that's actually the easy part. Because Barbara Brown Taylor describes encountering others in this way. She says, the hardest spiritual work in the world is to love the neighbor as the self. To encounter another human being, not as someone you can use, change, fix, help, save, enroll, convince, or control, but someone who can spring you from the prison of yourself, if you will allow it. And so think for a second about how very difficult this is. The spiritual practice that we're talking about today isn't just about supporting good causes or being kind or looking out for the little guy, even though all of those are important and essential. But it's about going into our world and encountering others because they are the gift to us. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that hard. I find it hard first because sometimes when I go out to help others, I do so convinced that I am the gift, right? I'm guilty of this. It's so easy to go out and say, I am the gift. I am the one giving the money or buying the stuff to donate, because I am the one who wants to be the savior, and I want to be able to give on my terms. But that still leaves me viewing the other as the object of my charity, not as a child of God and not as a gift to me. And second, I think it's hard because if we accept this and we set out to do it, the other is everybody else. Now, I read that and I think, seriously? Seriously, Jesus? Because I can assure you that that crabby driver who was talking on his cell phone with one hand and giving me the finger with the other hand, that driver was not a gift to me. Thank you very much. And when I think, Lord, that mean girl mom at the kid's school who kind of scoffed at my scraggly yoga pants, you want me to experience her as a gift? That is a gift that I can do without. Thank you very much. And so why are we asked to do something that is so hard? And I think it's because, like Jesus said, when we go out and we encounter the other and we truly see the face of God reflected in them, that is probably one of the most radical things that we could possibly do to bring change and more peace to our world. And that was radical even in Jesus' time. It was probably one of the big reasons that some people didn't like Jesus so much. Some people liked the rules, the clear rules that said who's in and who's out. They preferred to think that if somebody had wealth or position, that this was a sign of God's favor. The idea that God might not just tolerate the poor as objects of charity, but might actually love the poor so much that they would have a special place in the kingdom of heaven, that kind of radical acceptance was pretty threatening. And when I look around now, I don't see a lot of places advocating for that kind of worldview. It feels like these days, and I put myself right in the same boat, but I feel like we gain points for our ability to undermine others. And I get that, because there are causes that we're all really, really passionate about. And sometimes there are people out there, politicians or bloggers or neighbors or, dare I say it, even family members, who have points of view that are repugnant to us personally. And so what do? Do we set out to see the face of God in them? Or do we set out to find the most witty, cutting words that we possibly can to slam them? We try to top each other in our ability to dehumanize the other. And when we can't do it in person, we do it on blogs or postings or tweets. But at the end of the day, that's not going to work. And it's not going to work because it's completely out of whack with this world that God has given us. Bible scholar N.T. Wright says that justice means bringing the world back into balance. And central to our tradition, he says, is the belief that this passionate longing for justice comes straight from our Creator God. And so Jesus says flat out, if you love me and you love God, then you have to try to love everyone. Otherwise, your love isn't real. And so you might be thinking, okay, that's great, but what do I do? Right? We already feel overwhelmed sometimes going through life. We're already supporting mission partners. We're supporting organizations. We're helping the least of these. And I think we should all keep that up. But can we, as we're doing those things, can we look to recognize the full humanity of others? And I want to suggest that that's not a theoretical discussion. It's a where the rubber hits the road kind of point. And so I'd like to share some really practical ideas. And in order to do so, I'm going to apologize in advance because I'm going to tell a lot more stories about me, which is kind of funny because one of my stories is about the fact that I was so busy telling stories about me that I was a poor listener. So I want to apologize and let you know that I recognize that. But I also know that I learn from my mistakes. And so I want to share how much richer life can be when we're fully present, going in with this attitude that Jesus encouraged us to take. And so for our first spiritual practice, encounter strangers. And when we do, pay attention. So a couple of years ago, some parents from my kid's school took a cooking class together just for fun. And there was a woman there. Her job was to wash all of the dishes that we had created. Her name was Elsa. I very specifically remember her name because I had to keep handing her sharp knives to wash. And so in order to do so, I thought it was in the best interest of safety if I ask her name and talk with her and let her know that these knives were coming. And once I knew her name, I couldn't help but just chat with her a little bit every time I came back. And so I would just swoop in with more dishes, and we would chat briefly. And I can't pretend that we left that evening as BFFs, but I can tell you that I sensed that washing dishes for the whole evening was not her idea of fun. And the one thing in my power that I could do was to make it a little bit less burdensome. But all that to say, I didn't do anything extraordinary. And so I was really shocked when at the end of the evening she said, "Thank you. You are the nicest person I've met in a long time." And I say that not because I think I was the nicest person, but because I was astonished at how easy it was to earn that moniker. It made me think that Elsa probably didn't encounter a lot of nice people in her line of work. And I later realized that I think I was the only one in our whole group who had paid any attention to our dishwasher. And so at the end of the evening, our organizer started to collect cash to tip the chef. And I asked her, "Well, what about Elsa?" She said, "Who?" I said, "Elsa, the dishwasher?" And the organizer looked at me blankly. And she was a wonderful woman. All of the parents there are wonderful people who show up and help and care for each other. But nobody noticed this woman cleaning up after us the entire evening. And I think about that a lot because I realize people are put in our path every day. And we can choose. We can choose to step over them. We can choose to go around them. Or we can choose to encounter them and see how they might be a gift to us. And so second, that was a pretty straightforward story about just encountering somebody who you might just find on a day-to-day basis. But I want to encourage us to also encounter the real other. People who are not like us. People who don't see the world the way that we do. And who have radically different life experiences. And when we encounter them, I want to encourage us, specifically starting with me, to shut up and listen. And so I'll never forget the first transgender man I met. He's a husband of a good friend, and he was coming to dinner, and I was so eager to make him comfortable at our dinner table. I was so eager, in fact, that when we sat down, I made a huge point of talking nonstop, telling him all of these things just to reassure him that this was a safe place, that we were going to be open and respectful, and I just talked and talked and talked as though it were all about me. And he was such a patient listener. And when I finally stopped, he started to share his experiences. And oh my goodness. I mean, I have never... It took this from being a theoretical conversation to being a real-life human being sitting in front of me, telling me what it was like to now be a man and to have grown up as a girl. But can you imagine? Most of us don't know what that is like. And yet here he was telling me that as an adult, he had to kind of learn all over again how to navigate the world. He shared his confusion as a child of never fitting in. He shared the deep pain when his Christian parents just outwardly rejected him. And he shared his frustrations of all the court battles that he had been through to get basic documents that would allow him to get on a plane or to drive a car. And I'm so grateful that I listened to him because he just put a face on something that we might otherwise just think is a theoretical issue to be debated. And I want to be clear that just because we listen doesn't mean that we have to agree with everything. And it might be that the story I just shared with you has made you furious, in which case I thank you for being so respectful and listening so patiently. And I think we would just be in such a better place as a world if we could listen to each other's personal stories. And I know I would be a better human being if I could listen to people's stories. And so when we do listen, the final thing I want us to take away is just to withhold judgment. And again, that doesn't mean we have to agree. It doesn't mean we have to tolerate anything. And so when we encounter somebody who's just plain mean, we can say something firm and kind and walk away. When we encounter somebody who is abusive, we can and should walk away. But when we encounter people who just make different choices or see the world differently, can we be open to just giving them the benefit of the doubt? And Brené Brown has this stunning example of this in her latest book. And she shares a story where she was speaking at a conference and she was asked to share a hotel room with a stranger, probably something none of us would want to do. And to make it even worse, the stranger repulsed her. The woman was messy, foul-mouthed, utterly oblivious to the distress that she was causing her roommate. And so after that conference, Brown rehashed the story with friend after friend. And as she did, she became more and more convinced that she was right. Until finally, her therapist said to her, "Is it possible that this woman was just doing the best she could?" Now, Brené Brown at first found this equally annoying. She thought, of course the woman could do better than that. Anybody could do better than that. But then as she considered it, she realized that she had attributed so much to this woman without knowing anything about her. The more that Brené Brown thought about how annoyed she was, the more she convinced herself that this woman had behaved like that as a personal attack, a personal judgment on the fact that Brené Brown was neat and tidy and organized, and this other woman wanted to prove that that was wrong. She didn't know that. But that's the way that her mind worked. And I think about the times that our minds do the same thing, right? We tell ourselves, well, that other driver just thinks that her time is more important, and that's why she can't abide by the speed limit. We think, why is that guy in the movie theater talking? He is doing it just to annoy me, isn't he? We might not agree with the things that people say and do, and sometimes we shouldn't. But what if we asked that question? Perhaps this person is simply doing the best that they can. And maybe we'll find more productive ways in which to encounter the other. And I want to close by suggesting that that question, while it's great for strangers, it's even better for our nearest and dearest, right? By all means, let's not just encounter the stranger, but let's try to encounter, really and truly encounter, those closest to us. Sometimes it can be as simple as after you say, "How are you?" If you kind of get a sense to say, no, really, how are you? And then listen and want people to share with you. And then give that same undivided attention to family and to dear friends. Because I think when we see people all the time, it's so easy to take them for granted. And I think there are so many distractions that make it really easy, whether it's the cell phone or work or chores. It's hard to create space and time where we put our full emotional energy into the ones we love. And so I have found I like to spend a little time one-on-one with my children right before bed. I know a lot of parents love to do that. I'm not the only one. But one night, one of my sons said to me, "I'm on to you, Mom. You wait until I'm ready for bed, and then you sit down and you ask questions so that I will tell you all of my secrets." And you know what? He's exactly right. But the best part is it works. Even though he knows, he wants to talk. And he wants my full and undivided attention. And I would suggest that all of those who you love and who love you want that full and undivided attention. So let's remember what Jesus said, and let's remember what we read today from Barbara Brown Taylor, that one of the big gifts of encountering the other is that they draw us out of ourselves and our own narrow worlds. And when they do, they draw us into fuller lives with one another. Lives that we crave, whether we know it or not. And perhaps most importantly, they draw us into the fullness of life that God intends for us and that God intends for all of God's children. Amen.